Welcome to the sixth and final preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2020. We're now less than a week away from, well, potentially less than a week away, Corona pending, from the start of the season. So exciting times. Mark, or FB Donkey, welcome back to the show, mate.
G'day, mate. Good to be back. Good to be talking some footy.
This week, we're going to talk about the rookies, but we also have a little special guest with us for the first time for 2020. We're welcoming back Faz. Welcome on to the show, mate.
Oh, g'day, boys. Great to be back and great to be reaching out to our listeners again for season 2020. Let's hope we can get some of our form from seasons other than 2019 back and drive ourselves back up to the top of the league rankings and hopefully someone in the community can, or a few of us in the community can do well this year and be battling it out between ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And congratulations on making the 12th year, Faz.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a very long run, hasn't it? But here we are, stronger than ever.
Well, I never thought we'd experience quite a season like this where we're going to have one impacted potentially by a global pandemic. And we've got a lot of questions about that through the social media pipes, and really we're living in sort of fairly speculative situation at the moment. We're not too sure what it's exactly going to mean for the AFL season, so we're not going to spend a heap of time speculating on that in this episode. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, this is predominantly a rookies show.
It was only a week ago that we thought that the biggest problem we're likely to face over the next few months is the rookie shortage and how few there are, but how quickly things change.
Very, very quickly. Who knows? Supercoach might get shut down for the year if their platform can't be updated quickly enough to be able to account for whatever changes. That could be a legitimate thing. I have no idea. So anyway, we're here to talk rookies. We're here to talk about what we can control or what we can analyze. And glad to have Faz on the show. If you've been following Supercoach Coach for a while, you'll know that Faz has been pretty good with keeping his eye out on the rookies, and he's done some good research ahead of today's show as well. So it's going to be a ripper. And instead of analyzing every single potential rookie that might play, the way we're structuring up the show is to start with looking at the mock teams that were released on afl.com.au. So some of the journos made the call on who they think is going to make it into the best 22. We're starting off with those players, and then we're going to look through the selection statistics and talk about any other players that we haven't yet discussed who are in above 10% of teams. Before we get into the questions, as we do each week, just a quick plug. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to support the show. And there's heaps of bonuses at the preseason, and it's a good time to join. If you join us, you're eligible for our $250 group prize just for our Patreons. And, of course, heaps of bonus episodes that we've released throughout the preseason, as well as a team picker, which we just released. It's a pretty good starting template, and hopefully we'll kickstart the seasons or the selections of our Patreon supporters. So there's that to look forward to, and we'll try and do a quick Q&A at some stage before the season starts. So keep your eyes out for that. If you're a patron, we'll organize one Q&A thread to run through sort of some last-minute questions there. If you're not able to support the show, thank you for joining us anyway. And don't forget, there's still the Supercoach Coach group and the Supercoach Coach leagues that you can participate in. It's not too late to sign up for either of those two yet, so make sure you jump in. The details are in the podcast notes if you're looking to join. All right, let's get into the show then, and we'll start off with the backline players that have been named in that AFL mock team. We're going to start off with he's not quite a true rookie, but he has played games already, and that's Noble from Collingwood. Now, he's been in many, many teams that I'm looking at this stage of the preseason. So certainly from the two JLT games that he played in, scored a fair few points and played a bit of time on ground as well. And at 215K, we've got a decent chunk of the Supercoach community looking to solve their backline woes by paying a little bit of extra cash. Faz, what do you think about John Noble?
Yeah, he's really come along at the right time for me. With Stephen Hill going down with another soft tissue injury, I needed another player around that similar price point. So paying just a little bit extra for John Noble And I'm very happy with the signs that he's showing so far. Over 80% game time in both the Marsh games. People might remember his name from last year. He was one of the mid-season draft pickups at Collingwood. And what I'm quite impressed by is that he made his debut in round 17, just a 1 week in, and then straight back out. But then he played rounds 22, 23, the qualifying final and the prelim final. So there's obviously some people at the Collingwood Football Club that rate this guy very highly, given that they played him throughout the final series. So I think that there's no issues, or I can't say no issues at all with job security, but very safe job security, I see with John Noble. And at that price, he's only a bit more than some of those top-priced rookies are, the high draft picks. So you don't need him to be sort of scoring, you know, at the 85 to 90 level for that to be a good buy. I think if he's scoring 75, 80, maybe even 70 to 75, that's probably enough given the lack of rookies that we'll get into throughout the show. I think if you can get 70 points, 75 points for an on-field position, paying just over 200,000, I'm pretty happy with that. So he's pretty close to a lock in my team at this stage.
Mark, what do you reckon? At 215K and with the lack of rookie options, I know that he's certainly pretty close to being a lock, but I could see certain team structures that may not need John Noble as well. Are you finding Noble locked into your team? Where are you sitting on him?
Yeah, 100% locked, mate. I think that the teams that don't have him locked obviously have access to a few more rookies than I do, or are hoping that there's going to be a few more rookies. Mature age, you're not relying on a young guy, 215, like it's a... Maybe in previous seasons he wouldn't have been in, but, yeah, absolute lock.
All right. The other player that's probably in fairly similar territory is BZT, Zerk Thatcher from Essendon, 189,000. Had a really, really good JLT too. I saw it firsthand because contributed to Geelong losing. Scored a heap of points and looks to have cemented himself into the team with that sort of performance, at least from an outsider. That's what I reckon. So he's one that even ahead of Noble's locked into my team just because he's another 20K cheaper. And every dollar helps when you're picking rookies. I'll leave the two of you to inform me a bit more about your own player.
Absolutely.
Well, Mark, have you got any doubts?
No doubts, mate. I mean, I had some selection doubts before the last game, but I think his form in the VFL has been really good the previous couple of years. He's not going to be a reliable scorer at 80+, but he'll have maybe some big games as he showed last weekend. And, yeah, definitely in my team.
Yeah, he really backs himself, doesn't he? I saw him go for a few intercept marks, sort of in some situations where he thought maybe the spoil was the right option, but he certainly backs himself in. So I think he'll score reasonably well while he's in the team. And at the moment, Cale Hooker is that they haven't put a timeline on his return. And I think Paddy Ambrose is out as well to go with Hartley being delisted from last year. So part of the field that in previous years you might have said it'd be tough to break into the team at Essendon as a key defender. I think at least for the first part of this year, I can see BZT doing very well in terms of getting games.
Yeah, well, it's good news having both of those in sort of quite firm lock territory. Because we really don't want to say any of these players are too lockish. When we say a lock, it just means we're super, super likely to select them. It's hard to compare them to players like Grundy, though, in terms of calling them locks. But knowing that we've got these two players and that scoring potential looks all right and they could play on field, that's good news if we can find a couple of rookies on the bench and potentially another more, because that might allow us to run two to three rookies on field. And I'm seeing a lot of teams trying to push the rookie depth to be able to plumb money into their midfield instead or into Martin Whitfield type. So having BZT and Noble certainly help us in those endeavours. I'm guessing the two of you are likely to be structured up fairly similarly. So looking at the next potential on-field rookie option, one that's come up who's more expensive but is pick four from last year, and that's Ash from GWS, Lockie Ash. He looks like he's going to be playing come round one, has looked very comfortable off the halfback for GWS. Of course, spots and competition's always a bit of a challenge there, so that might be a bit of a concern, but you would think scoring potential and so on should be pretty good considering he's a top five draft pick. Mark, do you have much info about Ash?
He's the sort of player that could be in rising star contention and have a great year, but he's also a first-year player in a team that maybe doesn't have a lot of spots available. And he'd be competing with Isaac Cumming off the halfback flank. They've got Williams to come back in. So at his price, I wouldn't like to just fill my back line with players at that price. And so I definitely have Zerk Thatcher and Noble ahead of him. And, yeah, not in my team at the moment.
He has made the AFL mock team, so I would suggest it's not a bad selection if you're worried about your rookie bench and you want to potentially invest a little bit more in making sure that you either have a slightly higher scorer or, assuming he's named one, somebody who has a bit better job security. Ash does have DPP flexibility, so that is just something to keep in mind as well. He could work with a Starcevic type. So let's talk about him while we've got him. Another DPP player, back mid. He's 148 grand, plays for Brisbane. Faz, what do you reckon? A lot of people seem to be slotting him in into their back line, so it would suggest to me that we're looking for a bit more depth in the back line to be able to push some of these Noble BZT types into the on-field positions. Have you had Starcevic in your team?
I have for quite a while. I've actually been using him as a mid player. I think I've been finding there's a bit of a more of a shortage of rookies in the midfield than there are in the back line this year. So that's where I've had Starcevic planted for most of the preseason. He didn't set the world on fire in the Marsh series with 40 points in the first game and 61 in the second from 75% game time. He's not going to be a big scorer. It's all about whether he can stay in the team. There's amazingly zero players on Brisbane's injury list right now, so that's certainly not helping him, but it is encouraging that he's still being named in those mock round one teams. And there's a couple of gaps in Brisbane's side from last year with Luke Hodge having retired, and then players like Lewis Taylor, Ben Keys and Josh Walker all moving on to new sides, that there is potentially one or two slots up for grabs in that Brisbane side. So fingers crossed Starcevic can hold down one of those, but I wouldn't say I'm super confident in his job security. I think he'll get named round one, but I don't know if he'll stay in the side for, you know, the 6-7 weeks that we need him to.
That's potentially concerning considering we're paying a bit of a price premium for him. What do you reckon about that, Mark?
Been building for a couple of years, had some injury problems last year and very difficult to get into that side. I'm hearing he's in potentially ahead of Noah Answorth, who was quite good for our teams last year. Only had 45% game time in Marsh 1, but then got a lot more in Marsh 2. If named, he'll definitely be in my team. And I like what Faz said about potentially on your mid-bench, depending on where the rookies show up.
All right, next player is Jared Brander. Now, he's one that I've seen at D6 a fair bit. He is a former first-round draft pick from the prior year, pick 13 for West Coast. It's actually more as a tall player who can play as a key position, but he's since made the transition to the wing at West Coast, and after the Marsh series, looks sort of actually eventually won himself a spot in the wing come round one, which is pretty impressive. Obviously, 133 grand with DPP flexibility and a former first-round draft pick. If he's named round one, he certainly ticks enough boxes to slot into my side.
If named, lock and put him on your field.
I think he's probably going to end up in the back line for most people based on teams that I've been seeing, but just keep that in mind that you could run him down forward if it ends up that there's a shortage in the forward line.
Well, if Bloody Hill comes through, it would have been a pretty cute combo. So a bit annoyed there. All right, next rookie, Bailey Williams for West Coast. Now, two West Coast players potentially to start in our back line as rookies this year, but both actually potentially not playing in the back line for the actual teams. Brand, as we discussed, on the wing, and Williams actually would be coming in as the second ruck. So it looks like he may even pip the Vardy types to get into that slot come round one. He played Marsh 1, looked pretty all right, but Marsh 2, he was injured, and he's still in the rehab group. Some question marks whether he actually gets up, but he had 69 points in JLT1 from 70% time on ground. Mark Williams, if he's not named round one, what do you reckon you'll do?
Probably chuck him in the ruck spot just because there's not a lot of other potential playing guys in there, depending on Cameron and Zeri. But, yeah, that's where he'll probably end up for me. Realistically, that's where he's likely to end up anyway. I think he's in their best 22, but like you say, is he fully fit, and is he, if he pulled up sore after week one, is he actually able to play out a season? There's going to be some tricky bits around there, so I'd rather hide him in the rucks if
I can. Oh, I just think he's a good pick given, you know, the number one ruck at West Coast is Nick Nat. It's one of the few ruckmen that doesn't play as much game
That's true.
Time on ground as, you know, a Goldstein, a Gawn, a Grundy. think if you're backing them up, you've really got to have another element to your game. Mm-hmm. You know, a Mason Cox type that can actually be relatively effective in the forward line. If you're the Bailey Williams type, you just need to be able to go in there and ruck for
40%
of the game, and just be somewhat effective elsewhere. So I think there's probably still going to be some competition with Vardy, but Vardy does sort of fit more of that typical traditional ruckman mold of just a big lumbering type. I think Bailey Williams has a few more attributes that he can bring to the table.
Vardy and Hickey are crap. Williams will be in.
Well, last backline rookie that made the mock teams is Fisher for the Crows. He was pick 6 last year, and that's why he comes with a price premium. Did not play in Marsh 1, but returned for Marsh 2 and scored about 40, 50 points. Considering he cost a little bit more and he's actually a key back, I'd be pretty hesitant to go there personally, despite him being named.
If it wasn't for the price, I think he'd be in a lot of teams. I think he will definitely get games. The tricky bit is that, he only scored 47, and part of that was kicking a goal, yet he's probably going to be playing back most of the time. So really tricky to pick him based off one performance. He may surprise a few, though.
All right, let's go to the midfields now, and we'll start off with the picks 1 and 2 from last year. So Raul and Noah Anderson. Raul's locked into most teams that I look at these days. After the Marsh series, he looks to have shown enough scoring potential to be worth the extra dosh.
The first game, Marcus, was 44% time on ground, and he scored 100.
Wow. He's locked into most sides. Anderson, on the flip side, scored much poorer with 59 and 13 in the two games so far, and I don't think you'd want to pay for both of them with top dollar. So have either of you picked Anderson? Because I'm assuming you both have, Raul.
I haven't. I have definitely seen teams with him, and I think he needs to be potentially in consideration depending on how the rookies turn up and like whether Green is named in the midfield. So, you may need another high-priced guy there, and I think I wouldn't be get too carried away with his poor Masters form so far. I think he'll be better than that.
Another player that's probably in the same bracket is Sarong for Fremantle. He's priced pretty expensively too, being a top draft pick from last year, about 180, 190K. He's also listed to make the round one teams. Tickle your fancy at all, Faz?
Not for mine, just a bit of an expensive price point with not great scoring in Marsh. He went 60 points in Marsh 1 from 56% game time, but then that dropped to 16 points from 20% game time in Marsh 2. So I guess the same points that Mark made about Anderson, that you don't want to get too caught up in the scoring from the Marsh series, but I do tend to want to see a bit more from a player if I'm going to be paying that premium to bring them into my side. I want that there to be a reasoning behind that. And so wrong, I just don't see the scoring being there immediately. It seems like there could be a fair bit of flux in that Freo side from last year. It's going to be quite different. You know, obviously, a new coach in place with Longmuir, so I just don't know if things are going to be terribly settled yet or if it could be a bit of a year of change and flux, and so the team might be changing quite a bit week to week.
One player that, again, is a top draft pick from last year at pick 10, but has definitely cemented himself with high enough scoring potential from the Marsh series is Tom Green. So pick 10 to go with potentially pick 1 in Raul in our midfields. Tom Green's been pumped up for a while now as an absolute midfield bull and can rack up a heap of possessions and has a body that's potentially more ready to play in 2020 immediately. He's certainly done enough to slot himself into most sides that I'm seeing. 105 in JLT1 and 72 in JLT2. Mark Locked?
If named, then, he'll definitely be in my team. I think he is a bit of a different midfielder that the Giants don't have. We're going to be scrambling a little bit if he's not named, I think, and that's where potentially players like Sarong and Anderson do come into the frame a little bit.
And just keep that in mind, I suppose, when you are considering your teams while we're still a few days out of lockout, is that you probably want to keep a little bit of spare cash up your sleeve, or at least understand in your team what are the compromises you're willing to make to get a bit of spare cash if you have to upgrade to a Sarong or Anderson type, should the rookies that you expect to show up not show up.
Can I at this point ask a question, Marcus? Would you be willing to put one of these higher priced midfielders onto your bench? So say, for example, you went Rao, Green, and then we had Pickett, the next player we're going to talk about, coming into the three on fields. Would you be willing, if there was like just no really cheap rookies available, to actually punt on a Sarong on your bench or an Anderson on your bench?
I'd say so. I think to our show last week, we were talking a little bit more sort of in terms of strategy and team structure and rookie concerns, is trying to find players that can deliver you value and making those selections regardless of where they sit, because we might just struggle with cash generation full stop. And if you can't upgrade your team, it doesn't matter if you're getting a little bit better scoring on field because of a rookie. If it's not a premium by the end of the year, it's going to suck way more. So I guess coming back to putting an expensive rookie on the bench, what that means is I think I'd be willing to make that selection as long they presented more potential cash generation than a cheap rookie alternate would be. So if I'm picking a 120K rookie who I'm not too sure about, or who's a small forward that might only get up to 240, well, then I'd rather pay 180 for a guy who is quite elite. This year especially, I'm just looking to fill my team and my rookies with sort of the best value generation options possible.
I'm probably come from a pretty bit different perspective to that. I would be very reluctant to put anyone over 150 on my bench. That would be almost a blanket rule that I would be very unlikely to break. And it'd be just because, so you start taking 60K off field, and that can make really start compromising the players on field and really start compromising the amount of points on field. And you'd have to be really sure in that 160-plus player on your bench that they were going to score a lot better than the cheap rookies to be making that move. Now, I'm not 100% ruling it out, but it would be very unlikely for me.
I think the other potential consideration there, Mark, is that even though they might start on your bench, they are still potential backup options to come up on field if you have injuries, or if some of the rookies you're expecting to start don't end up scoring as you would expect. So I'd say, you know, if you're running three rookies in the back line, even if you start a slightly more expensive option on your back bench, you know, that rookie's still covering potentially three rookies that might have swings and roundabouts in their scoring. So that player's not necessarily just locked onto your bench either, right? Like the high scoring potential could come into the fray at some point to pull an unexpectedly poor scoring rookie off, or a dropped rookie, or whatever the case may be.
Possible.
Last midfield rookie that made the AFL mock team is probably the most selected player, I think, all preseason. Malian Pickett is basically a no-brainer. 124K, playing last year's grand final. Next game, nobody's showing up to his games. So goes from 100,000 to a crowd of zero into his first two games. That'll be a big trivia question for years to come. No-brainer. And on field as well, I'm guessing. Fuzz?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to score all that well. His Marsh form was 61 points in both games from 79% and then 90% game time. So probably be expecting a bit more, particularly with how well he played. I didn't see the Supercoach scores from the grand final because the season was over Supercoach-wise, but he looked phenomenal in the grand final. And so I guess I was expecting to see some higher scores through the Marsh series, but I think there's really no doubt whatsoever about job security for the time being. And I think I have more confidence that, you know, 60 is probably the floor on Pickett, and he could get better than that. Some of the other rookies that we'll get to, I think I don't really even have that confidence level that they'll get up to sort of the 50-60 in their scores. They could be, you know, some pretty low scores that we're dealing with early season. So I think, yeah, he's a lock in the team and then a lock on field as well.
All right, now to the rucks. And we've got two more expensive players here, but both are slated to potentially start in round one, which is not always the case. We don't always have options to pick up on the rookie bench, even if they are a little bit more expensive. I'm guessing the price point will definitely scare you off considering the discussion we just had, but we've got Luke Jackson for Melbourne, obviously last year's top ruck prospect and potential future Brody Grundy, such is the esteem he's held in at a very young age, and the other player being Callum Coleman-Jones for Richmond. And the benefit of him is that he's a ruck forward, so has that DPP flexibility. Mark, I know we've talked about expensive R3 options before and potentially as a way to reduce some of the risk if you are picking a player like Naismith up as your R2. What do you reckon about either of those two? And in general, what do you reckon about paying, you know, more than 180K for a ruck bench?
I guess it's all relative. They're both ruck forward though, aren't they?
Luke Jackson's ruck only, unfortunately.
Okay, so Coleman Jones probably interests me more, just a bigger body. Jackson scored amazingly well when he was the number one ruck against Segler in the second half, but not so well in the other game. So I don't really have Jackson in the frame. Coleman Jones hasn't actually been in my team, but if he's named round one, he's a potential pick, just depending on how the rookies come up. I probably wouldn't be too keen at R3. I'd probably want to put him in the forward line and link him up with a Cameron or someone like that.
Cameron as your ruck three and then CCJ up forward could be a pretty neat way to provide some cover. Let's move out of the rucks and go into the forward line where we're going to start off with Max King for St Kilda, one of the locks in the forward line. As a key tall and playing for St Kilda, there's some worries about that. But all he needs, hopefully, is a one big game where he might kick a bag of three or four against a poor opposition to hopefully see him go up enough in price. The forward rookies are actually a bit of a pickle at the moment, I'd say, potentially of all the positions, maybe causing a bit more of a headache. So King, relative to the other options especially, looks pretty good.
I'm not sure that's perfect advice. I think that he may be one of those players that we pick because he has good job security and there aren't a lot of other options, but he ends up being a pretty crappy pick just because his scoring doesn't get above 50. He's going to need to have a game where he kicks probably four or five to actually boost his scoring up and his price up, because we may get stuck with a player that only gets to 200, 210,000. He doesn't quite look ready to break it apart yet, because he played quite a lot of time on ground in those Smash Series games. I think it was, 82 and 70%. Didn't barely trouble the scorers at all. So always been in my team. I think he's a lock, but I think we might not love having him there as well.
Yeah, I think the bigger concern with a key position forward is more how low is their basement. Because if you're scoring 20s every week, even when you score a big game where you score 80 points, the 20 will drag your price increase back down and you might struggle to still break past 250. But most of the key position forwards, if they can manage just basement of about 40 to 50, if they have one big 80 game, that's generally enough to put them into about the 280-ish bracket, which starts becoming a little bit more palatable for a trade-out. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't really mind key position forwards as a rookie selection as long as their basement isn't too low. I actually prefer them over the small forwards, who I think the basement can be 10 points higher than a key position, but the upside potentially isn't as high.
I think your argument would be a lot stronger if he hadn't have already posted a 29 in the Master Series.
That's off 70% game time, Mark. You know, you get.
I think it calculates out to a 35 at 85% game time. So.
Perfect. You still said he was a lock, so we'll move past to Taylor, who's potentially the other next lock, and that's Curtis Taylor for North Melbourne. Really came into focus in the second JLT and made his way into way more teams after that point. He's actually now in over 20% of teams.
Yeah, hard to say no when you see 95 points from 86% game time, 21 touches, 2 goals. Been on the list for a couple of years, I think, already, so not a sort of a true first-year player. And I think that North will be keen to sort of get games into their youth with, Reece Shaw taking over sort of as the full-time coach now. I think he'd be keen to stamp his imprint onto the side, and it seems that Curtis Taylor is part of his plans for the future. And so not only will he get games, but I think get given responsibility and roles in games that should lead to high scoring. So seeing a player with that sort of scoring potential at that price is really, you know, the miracle that we've all been hoping for with this dearth of rookies this year. Mm. So I think that, yeah, I'm not surprised to see the selection numbers starting to skyrocket. And I think that he and Rankine will probably be the two most picked rookies on field in the forward line this year.
Locked in, and he's on my field.
If we're talking about the third locked forward rookie, it is probably who you mentioned, Faz, in Rankin. He's in 45% of teams, but of course hasn't played a marsh yet with an injury.
Stewie Jew has said getting a debut round one. So it seems like the word from within the club is that they might have just been a bit cautious over the Marsh series and they're ready to let him loose on the AFL. And I think that even if he wasn't named round one, I'm probably pretty it would take – I need to hear some pretty bad news for me to say I'm going to take Rankine out of my side altogether, because it sounds like if he doesn't debut round one, it'll be round two or round three. So obviously – far too early to be looking at any downgrade of the players that you do have. So, you know, when we saw that he was injured and didn't play Marsh, we might have been hoping, you know, maybe this is a little bit longer and he'll be coming in round five, round six and be the perfect first downgrade target. I think he's going to be in between. And so I'd be picking him as a starter, whether or not he's picked round one.
Yeah,
I reckon most people have those three forward rookies locks. The next selection that the most coaches are looking at is then to try and pick one more rookie to be able to potentially push two on field and carry that as your starting forward structure into the season. So I'm going to talk through a few other options that might slot in that spot. And one that's a bit of a front runner is Keziah Pickett for Melbourne. There's a small forward. He looks like he's busted his way into the starting team after a strong JLT series. We've also got Georgiadis. Lots of new names. Hopefully we're pronouncing them all right, but our listeners will let us know if we're not anyway. So please go ahead. Yeah, okay, thank you. Georgiadis is plays for Port Adelaide and plays tall. And then we've also got Ben Davis for Adelaide. Again, another small forward, half forward. So those are probably the three options that are a little bit more front of mind, but in sort of a good showing as well. They've also, all three of them have made the AFL mock team. In terms of scoring potential, job security, who's drawn your eye? I think for me, Georgiadis is probably the one that I'm least likely to select. I've been looking at Davis probably as the front runner of those three.
I actually had another Adelaide player in place of Davis in my team, which was Ben Crocker, who's come across from Collingwood in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he'll score particularly well, but he seems to have been brought in to add some forward pressure to their side, and so we'll sort of be playing that defensive forward role and can hopefully chip in with a goal or two per game, and I think be pretty low possession numbers, but you know, if it's sort of 5-6 tackles per game, 10 disposals and, you know, a goal every second week, then that could hopefully be enough for about a 60 average. So Crocker's been actually the one ahead of all three of those fellas that's been in my team for the last few weeks of the preseason. I have seen, though, that Crocker didn't get named in that AFL mock, the mock teams for round one. So that's probably the reason why the other three are all ahead at this stage. But, yeah, I guess my thinking had been much more focused around Crocker for the time being.
Yeah, Mark had put him on the run sheet, despite the fact that, as we discussed right up front, the two categories of players that we're looking at are, did you make the AFL top mock team and are you in above 10% of teams? Crocker is actually in 4.3% of the teams, and he didn't make this mock team, even though he made the emergency list. But I know, considering he has already played AFL before, he's obviously older, more mature, and he doesn't come at too much of a price premium at only 150. I get the understanding from the little bit I spoke to Mark on that forward rookie spot that you're likely to pick Crocker if he's named, Mark.
No, I just thought that he was in consideration. I think there's a good chance that he is named round one. He's a little bit older, bigger body, probably scoring's not there. It's a little bit of a tricky discussion. And I know that in the team, the Patreon team that we released during the week, Marcus, one of the flashpoints that we were discussing was if you have two forward rookies on field, and my team only has one. And part of it is the fact that I'm not overly happy with any of these guys. If I had to pick, I'd probably line up with you, Marcus, and go with Davis. Scored a goal in each of the Marsh games. I thought that was pretty good. And Adelaide do have a history of playing someone like him. And then I'd probably have Pickett next, then maybe Crocker and into Georgiadis after that. Georgiadis, I think, will play, but his scoring doesn't look great at the moment.
So we've been through everyone who's in the AFL mock team. Now, there's a few players that we're going to talk about now who are in above 10% of teams. We're not going to run through too many of them in depth because realistically, not only have we taken a fair bit of time, as Faz has shown me the watch there, but also that some of these players, it appears, have sat in ghost teams that have not updated their teams throughout the preseason because they certainly aren't in line for games. We'll go through them pretty quickly and then just stop on any that particularly appeal. So we'll start off with the back line, and we've got Will Gould. He's in 50.1% of teams.
If named, I'll pick him. Seems unlikely, though.
We've got Stephen Hill in 29.8% of teams. I'm guessing that's the same case, Mark.
Yeah, I think that unexpected to be named, but if he is, he comes back in.
If he's not named, but it's looking like his quad's not a serious injury, he might be back rounds two or three, would you still consider picking Stephen Hill?
Probably not as a starter. I don't like the sound of someone with super crazy injury history getting injured in the preseason.
Trent Rivers from Melbourne is in 28.5% of teams.
Nope.
Hayden Young for Frio.
I know some very good super coaches that will pick him if he's named, despite his higher price.
But didn't play either Marsh game.
I think he might have been injured, and that they are talking about potentially debuting him in round one. So, yeah, he might be a bit of a surprise out of the bunch, a bit like who was it, Smith from last year, from the Bulldogs, that people picked that didn't play in the preseason and ended up being a really good pick.
Pick seven from last year, rebounding intercept defender. Certainly could be a good score if he does get named. Trent Bianco is the last one in above 10% of teams in the back line at 15.3% for Collingwood.
Who? No.
Yeah. All right. We're going into midfield now, and we're actually starting with a couple of relevant players here. Connor Buderich for Gold Coast, mid forward, and attractively at 107,000. So that's a pretty good discount. And he's that absolute basement priced rookie.
If Mark, I know absolute lock.
And was another one of the players mentioned, I believe, by Stewie Jew as a ooh, debutante.
Awesome.
I think it was Raoul, Anderson, Rankinen, and Buderich were the four.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Especially with that price point, I'm sure he'll be making his way into quite a few sides. You can put him as both a midfielder and as a forward. Devin Robertson for Brisbane is the next player in 34.9% of teams. Now, his job security, I think, is quite a bit more suspect in terms of whether or not he will actually make the Brisbane side. But he's one of those sliders from last year that we're actually pretty happy to get at 117K. People thought he'd go higher than that, and also racks up a fair bit of the pill. So he's one that, if named, I'm assuming will slot into plenty of sides.
Yeah, lock him in if named.
Yeah, he's in my current draft side at the moment.
Brisbane's injury list, as Faz mentioned earlier, though, is the problem.
Next, Ned McHenry, 21.8% of teams for Adelaide.
Nope.
Adam Bonner, who we talked about earlier in the preseason, mid forward, 200 grand, 17.6% of teams. May have missed one JLT with an injury or something like that, but he's.
I think he was going to, but he ended up playing like half.
Okay.
Yeah, it was 14 points from 27% game time, and that was a second Marsh game, but that was injury affected, was it, Mark?
He was potentially not going to play because he'd picked up some awareness, but ended up playing and coming on in the second half, and yeah, definitely didn't do enough. He was fresh legs in a game and couldn't make an impact. So never really been in my team, but I know he was in a lot very early in the summer.
He did score above 1 point a minute for time on ground in the first JLT he played in. So if he's named for round one, big-bodied midfielder, he may be worth considering depending on how some of the other rookies come up. All right, Sam Flanders for Gold Coast, 12.4%.
Not on my radar.
All right, we're going to finish up with these ruck rookies in above 10% of teams. Darcy Cameron's the most obvious one at 42.7% of teams. Even though I really do like the ruck forward flexibility as a starting rookie and his potential chance to even get games, I think he might beat Cox in for games at some stage in the season. If Williams is a chance of getting games early, I think you just have to pick him over somebody who you're not sure will get games. And we've seen players in the past look likely and then just never come in for the entirety of the season, being stuck behind Goldstein types. he's got Grundy to compete with. I will not pick him if Williams, especially if Williams is available in round one. But definitely a good pair for, you know, CCJ, or to keep flexibility potentially if you're taking a riskier ruck two. Even if you aren't starting off with a ruck forward like Segler, having a ruck forward at your R3 allows you to swap a forward rookie into your rucks for cover if needed. So the flexibility is still could mean that he's a decent selection for some structures and some sides. And then the next few, Combin and Zeri for North Melbourne, both ruck forwards actually. So they've got heaps of ruck forwards, which is a bit odd. I think Zeri is probably the one that might get some games.
Yeah, played both Marsh games and actually did quite well. 98 points in the first Marsh game from 79%, including two goals. But then that slipped to 37 points from 68% and three disposals in Marsh 2. So I would be surprised if North are playing Goldstein plus Zeri, but looks like he's next in line if anything were to happen to Goldstein.
Which nothing ever does.
Good point.
All right, so we're just going to finish up with three players that, again, are in less than 10% of teams and didn't make the mock teams, but we think are decent chances of playing and starting. We already talked about Ben Crocker for Adelaide. The other one's Toby Watson for Fremantle. Surprisingly, in only under 5% of teams, especially considering how impressive his JLT series ended up being relative to the other options that are there. He did play two games, which not a heap of players did. He played more than 79% game time for both games, which not many players did. Scoring wasn't perhaps the best, 62 and 42, but if he's named, looks to have some decent job security, and if he spikes a game here or there, it'd be enough to push BZT and stuff onto field and take him as a backup option on your bench.
Yep.
And then the last one is Sharp for Gold Coast, available as a midfielder. Faz, do you know much about Sharp?
So Sharp's managed to get some game time in both the Marsh games. Hasn't scored very well though, so 16 points from 40% game time. And in Marsh 2, he just played in the second half with 42 points from 46% game time. The word that I've heard from Stewie Jew, which I've mentioned before, Sharp wasn't one of the players named. So I don't know if he's necessarily in line for a round one debut, and it doesn't look like he's got great scoring potential if he does play. But if it's a case of just picking the only options we have, Sharp could make it into considerations. But for the time being, I think that there's enough other options out there that I won't be looking at Sharp.
Sharp's in my team at the moment just because of limited options. Got to remember that your team benefited out of this one, Marcus. They traded up pretty hard in last year's draft. They swapped pick number 27 for first-round pick for next year to pick up Sharp because they were so keen. So I reckon there's a really good chance he'll get games early on if it's not round one.
Okay, cool. That's it for the rookies. We're not going to labor over the rookies any further than that. Understand, I guess, what your levers are. I think the main potential stressor for super coaches is once team sheets get released, if teams aren't named as you expected, you want to at least know where your team can go without making compromises that you're coming up with literally in the moment that you might regret once we head into lockout.
One thing that I've found in previous years is remember that by Thursday night, you just have to set your Richmond Carlton players.
Yep.
Oftentimes, I've just been in a complete panic because half the rookies I thought were going to get named didn't show up. I'm just pulling players out of nowhere. And I think that's how I ended up with Noah Bolter last year, a guy that I hadn't really done any research on in the preseason, but was there as a playing player. And I hadn't sort of done the background research. So, maybe if you are feeling concerned, just look into any of those Richmond Carlton players. I think the only ones that we mentioned today were Marley and Pickett and CCJ in the ruck line. But if there's anyone else that you think is a smoky to get named, maybe just spend a little bit of time having a look into their background and what you think about, whether they will stay in the side, whether they'll score well, because you don't want to be in a spot I was in with Noah Bolter last year where you've just sort of last minute brought him into the side and then 1 week later you're wondering what the hell is this guy doing in there.
Yeah, Pickett, definitely make sure you have him by Thursday. I think the other ones apart from CCJ that are a potential either for round one or earlier on is Tom Williamson from Carlton and Riley Collier-Dawkins for Richmond.
If Williamson's named round one, I'll try and find the money for him.
Yeah, he's played for Carlton VFL team and impressed a lot of supporters for a while now, and they're just looking to get time into him eventually. So somebody to look out for Thursday lockout. Okay, we spent a bit of time on that. Maybe the final thing just to wrap up the show is just a quick ranking of some of the forwards. So we had some questions around ranking of Smith versus Brayshaw versus Stevens, and quite a few questions around Darcy McPherson. So I just want to quickly touch on those. I'm pretty sure from what we've been putting out so far that Smith and Stephen are probably the two that we have ahead of the pack. But maybe if we have a bit of a stab at ranking them, I might give it a crack first. I'd go Smith 1, Stephen 2, Brayshaw 3, McPherson 4. And I have Smith and Stephen over Brayshaw and McPherson because they've done it before and we're just more counting on them sort of repeating the past rather than stepping out. And just keeping in mind that I think we have put our hand up already this preseason to say that sometimes Mark and I tend to underestimate or over-emphasize the risk with these sorts of breakout players. So we are lower likelihood of recommending them in general, especially because we recommend them to a broad audience. The percentage likelihood of player achieving his potential is a big part of us driving those recommendations. But, yeah, that would be sort of how I sort of sit on those. Maybe before we jump to you, Mark, let Faz have a crack at it because I haven't heard your thoughts on any of these guys so far.
I don't think my rankings are going to change from what you've just put forward there. I think I'd agree. I'd have it Devon, Jack Stephen, Brayshaw and McPherson. And I think as well, I agree with all the points that you've made. But another factor for me, I think we've ranked those players in ascending order of price as well. Devon Smith being the real value pick there at 335. Then it goes Stephen at 360, Brayshaw's at 380, and I think McPherson's about 440 odd. It just means that they each need to do a bit more than the one before them because of the price tag that they start with. I think Devon Smith is probably in that zone that you are picking him, looking at him being a keeper. But if he was to just spike up in price and then plateau a bit, you could trade him out and feel a bit better about it. You can't spend 440 on a guy like Darcy McPherson with a view to then trading him on. He has to be a keeper. And as you said, he's not somebody that has shown premium scoring in the past. Last year got sort of close to it, but I think I'd rather see it this year, pick him next year than take that punt. It can go pretty badly if he just sort of stays where he is or even has a minor step backwards and you've paid that much money for a guy who's averaging sort of 80, 85. I think you're in a really difficult zone of, you know, what do I actually do with a player like that? I like going the guys a bit cheaper and you've got a bit more flexibility there. But
132 and 128 are his two JLT games, Darcy McPherson, and that's a big reason why everybody's talking about him all of a sudden. Probably in terms of numbers-wise, one of the most impressive preseason from the Marsh series. Mark, do you agree with what Faz and I have been saying so far, or do you have a slightly different opinion on McPherson?
I agree with pretty much everything you said, and my ranking is actually the same as you guys. I probably watched McPherson a lot closer than most other people last year because he was in my draft side, and considering I got him so cheap, was a big part of me doing well in draft last year. I'm just not sure that he has the pedigree to be a full premium as a forward, and I'd rather take a punt on someone with a pedigree like Petrarca than McPherson or a significant role change like Segler. McPherson might do it, but I think that Baz's point about just see it before you, like see him do it over a season before you actually pick someone like that. The risk is just too high.
They also won both their Marsh games. so that they won as many games in the Marsh series as they did last year. Is that right? maybe one less.
I think Witz is the only person other than Ablett in the last, I'm not sure how many years, from Gold Coast to actually average over 100.
That's the main thing. Like, it's like, do you really want to be picking a player that's going to be losing that many games? Because they struggle to score points.
I don't care if it's Raoul or Buderick, or, you know, a guy who's at a basement price. There's still going to be some points to go around. But, yeah, I just think if you're losing three in every four games, which I think Gold Coast will still be doing this year, it's just going to be really hard as a forward to have that premium level of scoring.
All right. So that wraps up our preseason. What a bloody glorious preseason it's been. Thank you for another great set of six shows, Mark.
Yeah, no worries, mate. I just hope it all works out and we actually get to see the season play out. And just a little bit worried that games are going to be compromised and our seasons are going to be compromised when you have higher levels of rotation. I'm honestly a bit scared going forward about what it's going to look like from a Supercoach perspective.
We'll talk a bit more coronavirus in our Patreon special. So to our Patreon subscribers, look out for that. Faz, thank you very much for joining us for the first show back. Sure, the listeners are glad to hear you before the season starts in earnest or potentially starts in earnest. Anything to finish off with, mate?
Oh, just happy to be back. Just look after yourselves, look after the people around you out there.
And as a generous show from the Supercoach Coach podcast, the top scorer of round one will win a Supercoach Coach stubby holder and, very importantly, a roll of toilet paper. So something for you all to look forward to.
The numbers are about to spike.
With a picture of Marcus's team imprinted on the toilet paper so you can wipe your ass with Marcus's shitty team.
All right. And with that fantastic note, we'll sign off. And good luck for your teams. Good luck for team sheets. And we'll see you after lockout.
See you soon. Yeah.